From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2012 with the inaugural First Niagara Rochester Fringe Festival, and it was a great success. 30,000 people, many venues. By the next year, they were at 50,000, and they have more than doubled the attendance. So by last year, the Fringe Festival drew more than 64,000 people at dozens of venues. It is so successful that I don't know they can call it a Fringe Festival anymore. It's not fringy, it's like mainstream now. But seriously, it's coming again in September, and we're previewing it now for a number of reasons. First, to kind of get you set for what's coming up, let you know if you want to plan to go to the Fringe Festival this year, and also because there's a deadline of sorts to tell you about, and a lot of people may want to participate in certain things. So let's go ahead and introduce our guests. This is one of those hours where we don't have nearly enough chairs, probably, or time to deal with all of the guests. It is packed in the studio, and it's going to be fast moving. Erica Fee is here. She'll be here for the hour. She's the producer of the First Niagara Rochester Fringe Festival, has been there since the beginning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I always like talking to you as we get closer to the festival to find out how you really are.
I don't tell the real answer.
any drama this year?
Oh, yeah. We keep the drama on and off the stage, I see.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you always, sometimes it's is this tent coming? Is this not going to
be? Yes.
So anyway, point being, going okay?
It's going okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm still around. I'm still existing. I'm still breathing. So yes, it's going. It's going well. It's a lot of stress putting on 500 performances and events in a 10-day period. But you know what? It's totally worth it.
All right. So the dates this year are when to when?
September 15th through the 24th.
All right. 15th through the 24th. Did you say more than 500 performances?
Yes, I did say more than 500.
This is year five. 2012, mm-hmm. You had how many performances?
We also had, 2012, we had 180.
Okay. So you're essentially tripling in size in 5 years.
Yes.
Are you maxing out? I mean, is this really where you want to be?
What we did last year, we also had over 500. And yes, we decided to not expand performance numbers. We asked our venues to keep a cap on things because we really want to expand audience numbers so that we grow organically.
All right, so answer my snarky question then. Can you really be a Fringe Festival if you're this successful?
You can totally be a Fringe Festival if you're this successful. The Edinburgh Fringe, which takes place the entire month of August, last year had over 50,000 performances. So yes, you can definitely be a Fringe.
I think you meant 50,000 people attending. No, 50,000 performances.
Yeah, that's right. It's the largest arts festival in the world. It's the largest single driver for the Scottish economy in terms of a tourism event.
And it goes back to 1947, as I recall, but it got the name Fringe. Why?
So what happened was in 1947, there were 8 theater groups who turned up unannounced to perform at the Edinburgh International Festival, which is a curated theater festival, and they just turned up. They hadn't been invited, and they weren't part of the official program. So there was a reviewer who was trying to figure out what do we call them, so he nicknamed them the Festival Fringe, and he thought it could never happen again, and then it just snowballed to what's now the largest arts festival in the world.
And speaking of largest, well, Rochester's is not the largest Fringe Festival in the United States, but in the top three now?
Oh, yeah, we're right up there. We all kind of vie for number one. So the other big ones are Orlando Fringe, Hollywood Fringe, Minneapolis has a Fringe. So we're all right up there. We kind of switch positions, as it were, every year in terms of, how many attendees we have, how many shows. New York City also has a big Fringe. But yes, we're definitely one of the most attended in the country.
And I know there's a few dozen Fringes, again, of varying sizes. But now that you've got 5 years under your belt, you've got a reputation that you've built. You've got people who come from all 50 states and internationally to come see the shows here. Are you hearing from Fringe organizers in other cities who want to sort of collaborate or at least learn from what's going on here?
Yeah, we're actually a member of the U.S. Association of Fringe Festivals. So every year, the producers of the Fringe Festivals get together for a real knees up once our festivals are over to swap ideas and share best practices. But yes, we have had other Fringe Festivals tell us that they love what we're doing in Rochester. And in fact, they've kind of nicknamed it the Rochester model, because what we're doing is a little bit different from what some of the other Fringes are doing. For example, San Diego always refers to it as the Rochester model. And others are trying to, I guess, maybe, I wouldn't say copy, but perhaps are inspired by us.
All right, so forgive me, but is the model, is it the binary thing? I mean, is that essentially what we're talking about?
Yeah, we're a bifurcated festival.
A bifurcated festival. That's what I mean. Okay.
Yeah. So we are similar, most similar within the United States to the Philadelphia Fringe, in that we have half of our festival is very similar to the Edinburgh Fringe, in that the venues curate the shows themselves. There's no artistic control coming from the fringe side of things. We tell the venues, you know, go for it, program whatever you want, but we do have a central application process, and that allows for creativity and freedom and surprises, and really allows the venues to kind of have a stake in the game. But then the other half of the festival is curated by the festival itself to draw excitement and to bring in headliners and to draw press attention and to really, as we say, bring people downtown and then trap them downtown. So we do things like big free outdoor events, and then we bring in some headline acts as well.
Yeah, I mean, so everybody remembers Bandaloop and past years, things like that. But you also have someone like Patton Oswalt.
Right.
I mean, that is a huge name in comedy that you have coming.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Patton came in 2012 and he's coming back to help us celebrate our fifth Fringe. So we're thrilled that he's going to be back. He'll be at Kodak Hall at Eastman Theater. But we're also doing, we've done Bandaloop before, Circus Orange. They were the acrobatics and pyrotechnics group. This year we're bringing in a group called Streb. And Elizabeth Streb, who is the choreographer behind Streb, is actually a Rochester native. And they are a world-renowned company. They're an extreme action dance company. They do things that you didn't even know were possible with the human body, or basically you didn't think that you could do it and then stand up afterwards. A lot of falling from height, a lot of it's just absolutely, in some ways, insane. But we are going to be doing that for free for the public on the first Friday and first Saturday of Fringe.
That's Streb.
That's called Streb.
Okay. And it's free, and it's where?
It's going to be at Parcel 5, the old Midtown site. So next to 1 East Ave, if you need to program your GPS. And that will happen on Friday night, September 16th, and Saturday, three times, actually, on September 17th.
All right, so free outdoor shows there. And, you know, I know this is your job, and you are in touch with these kind of shows around the world, but I'm also curious, you know, whether it's Streb or a Bandaloop or these things that certainly I and most people haven't heard of until you bring them here. How do you find them? Are you in touch with other Fringe directors in American cities? Are you looking internationally?
So we are the only Fringe festival in the United States that brings in these huge free outdoor events.
Oh, interesting.
So we're a little bit different in that way. And I guess that is why people are calling us the Rochester model. We have an artistic committee on our board, of which David here is a member. And we are constantly looking for shows. And there is no, sadly, there's no directory for all these shows. So we have many people on the committee who are connected in the artistic world, and we're just always on the hunt for the next big thing.
Do you travel and go see them?
We do travel and go see them sometimes, but, you know, a lot of these outdoor spectacle shows are actually from outside of the United States. Mm-hmm. So we don't often travel to see those. We see those on YouTube. But really, the outdoor spectacle performances are very big in Europe, big in South America. And Streb, we've actually been trying to get Streb for the last few years, but we haven't been able to get Streb. She, of course, performed at the London Olympics. Streb did at Vancouver Olympics, Pan American Games last year, recently Lincoln Center. But this is her 30-year anniversary, so she's seeing this as her very special homecoming.
All right, we're talking to Erica Fee, who is the producer of the first Niagara Rochester Fringe Festival. They're celebrating their fifth Fringe here in Rochester this year from September 15th through the 24th with more than 500 performances, basically tripling in size from the first year. But they're really in that comfortable spot now of size. You expect another 60,000 plus coming this year? I mean, is that a good guess?
You know, we never really know. So much of it, of course, depends on the weather, of course, as well. So we all have a prayer circle going for good weather, of which you are now a member.
I hate to tell you this. We need rain.
Well, we can hold off for those tickets, quite frankly. Yes, yes. If everything's dead by then, it's not going to make a difference 10 days, for 10 days. But anyway, we can have a huge monsoon right before. So we can never totally predict anything about this festival, but we do hope to increase our audience numbers every year. So we would hope to increase over last year's numbers.
Well, in a minute, we're going to start flying through these all the guests here to tell us about these different things going on. But just to picture it, if you haven't been to Fringe, you know, we talked about some of the big name stuff, but there is everything, shows with just a few people and sort of smaller spaces, more than 500 performances, how many of our, which roughly are free?
We have about 120 of which are free.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how many of which may be outside?
Well, everything that happens on Gibbs Street is outside. Yep. Everything that happens over at Parcel 5 is clearly outside. But then we have over 20 venues that are indoors.
You know, and there are certain things that are indoor-outdoor. I mean, Remote Rochester, which I did last year,
right.
Indoor-outdoor.
That's right. That's coming back.
And yeah. that's coming
that,
back?
That is indoor-outdoor.
Okay. And will it be a different, or will I keep the same thing?
It will be very similar to last year. There will be a few tweaks because, of course, there's some construction going on in downtown Rochester. So we were actually filming and making some of the tweaks today.
Probably easy for them to keep mostly the same model because I know a lot of people who could not get tickets who sort of waited to the last minute and think, I'll go to Remote Rochester, and it was sold out.
Yeah, that's right. Last year, it was a hugely popular hit. It's already selling very well for this year.
All right. So 15th through the 24th is Fringe. You're online where, Erica Fee?
We're at rochesterfringe.com.
As always. And let me bring in first David Henderson, who is, among other things, well, I want to talk about Grimm's Mad Tales and what's coming up here. We'll start with you. First of all, what is Grimm's Mad Tales, David?
Grimm's Mad Tales is a large-scale, site-specific performance of the Grimm's brothers' household stories and fairy tales that were written in 1812 and published in 1812. Excuse me. And we use over 200 performers out on the street who create their own costumes, who are assigned a story and create a character, and then they perform them for... last time we did it for Spoon River Rochester, it was over 5,000 people that came between two nights.
Okay. What do you need for this performance?
We need performers.
You need performers.
Yeah, we're casting now. We have about just over 100 people cast so far. We're still looking for more, and we're looking for all sorts of people, people from amateur to superstar, we like to say. We're looking for seasoned professionals who want to do something a little bit different that's not on the stage, and we're also looking for people who haven't performed since high school because it's too busy for them. They can't commit to a month and a half of rehearsals and perform on a stage and put in that time. People who have been away from it or secretly want to perform. And once you give them that platform, it's amazing what comes out.
So you need roughly how many more? 100 or so?
We need at least 100 more.
At least 100 more. And how do they
You can
get
sign
in
up at grimsmadtales.com. And it's very easy. There's no audition. We don't require memorization, and there's only one rehearsal out of three that you need to go to. We try and make it as accessible as possible.
You don't require memorization. What do you require?
Make your own costume.
Like a warm body?
Show up to rehearsal and performance.
Okay.
And, you know, the great thing is we have some parameters for the costumes. It's a colored thing. It's all red, black, white, and purple. And people think that it's going to be really limiting, but then the creativity that comes out of it really shocked us when we did Spoon River Rochester.
Grimm's Mad Tales, obviously two M's if you know the history. Grimmsmadtales.com. It's September 23rd and 24th at 6 p.m., about a 40-minute show.
40-minute performance.
And Gibbs Street, it is free.
It is free, yes.
And if this all comes together the way you want...
It's going to be
Tell
fantastic.
Me what it's going to look like.
It's going to look like a living library. It's sort of an oral orchestration that's going on with storytelling and character and costume parade.
Okay.
And the audience walks around in between the performers and the choose your own adventure style.
How does this fit into sort of the model of Fringe, Erica Fee?
Well, we're always trying to do something different. Again, we're trying to draw people downtown, and this kind of site-specific theater, I think, is really pushing the envelope. We had such fantastic feedback from Spoon River Rochester that it's not just about making it, we make downtown, I think, very vibrant through events like these, and we're just doing something that I am sure no one has encountered a situation where they've been surrounded by that many Grimm's characters before.
I don't think so.
Maybe nightmares afterwards.
Right, exactly.
Well, good luck on coordinating.
Thank you.
And you've got you can submit to be a part until when? Do you have a cutoff here?
September 7th. So because the auditions don't start till after then, and we just want to make as many people. Make room for as many people to sign up, so it's a long casting.
All right, so that's Grimm's Mad Tales. Let me talk to Lou Highsmith about Rock Bottom Slam, if we could. Hi, Lou.
Hello, Evan.
Tell me about Rock Bottom Slam.
Rock Bottom is Rochester's, I think, first and only adult slam poetry team. We were privilege to be a part of last year, and this year we're taking it a little further on the fringe. Not only are you going to have slam poets, but we're infusing true art dance. So it's spoken word in that slam tradition, along with dancers. So there's going to be about 10 slam poets and 10 dancers, and much larger venue this year than last year. And we're doing two shows instead of one.
I suspect a lot of our listeners may not have ever seen slam or know exactly what you mean by it. What do you mean by it?
Slam poetry is poetry, but there's a strong concentration not only on the content, but the performance as well. Very much so in the grain of social consciousness, just things that are happening in our world. So with this show, we have the opportunity to infuse dance and the slam poetry, really driving home the message of everything, every piece that we're doing.
Some people may wonder if it's ad-libbed, if it's just flowing, if it's freestyling, and it is not. Right?
No, absolutely not. That's a misnomer. With slam poetry, it is written, it is memorized. There's no reading from any type of phone or notebook. It's everything that's memorized with the emphasis on the performance as well as what we're saying.
What do you like to write and perform about yourself, Lou?
Oh, personally, for me, anything that I see going on in the world, it could be love, it could be inspired by my children, by my husband, it could be whatever's happening in the country, socially, a wide range. I'm a writer, and so I write what I see.
There's been nothing really sort of happening lately.
Wow. A lot of material.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of material. How many performers in Slam?
Right now, I'm actually performing. I'm the director of Rock Bottom, so they dragged me out this year. Last year, I was just there in the capacity of directing things, but I was inspired to write a piece, and they were like, Miss Lou, you have to perform along with us. So it'll be 10 of us all together.
And what are you hoping? I mean, you're obviously performing and writing on things that matter to you, that have sometimes social justice, those kind of messages. Mm-hmm. What do you hope the audience has taken from these kind of performances?
Our message really this year is hope. Whatever is going on, we're going to tap into the pain and the anguish of things, but hopefully leave you on a note of it's not helpless, it's not hopeless, there's still hope. So hopefully that's the message that we're going to drive home this year.
I know you know a lot of people in all communities, but particularly the African-American community, are struggling with hope right now.
Yes.
And why do you feel like you've got a chance to open the door to something more hopeful when some people feel like they're having a hard time seeing it?
Honestly, if we don't continue that message of hope, it's not going to help matters at all. With what's happening in not only our community, but I'd say nationwide, you can even go worldwide, you want to make sure that people don't give up and just throw up their hands and say it's helpless and it's hopeless and we can't do anything. So for me personally, I can't just not do anything and just complain and not do anything to change things. Because if you lose hope, then there's no way that things are going to get better.
Lou Highsmith is with Rock Bottom Slam, which you can see at September 22nd.
Yes.
6 p.m. and September 24th at 7 p.m. It's about a one-hour show.
Yes.
Right? And that's on the Theater Rock stage. The main stage tickets are $10. They do say it's best for 13 and over for the show, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And slightly mature material.
Anything else you want to leave the audience with on what to expect, especially if they're coming to a slam show for the first time?
Yeah. With this show, expect truth and expression. Yes.
How's it fit into the overall scheme there, Erica?
Again, it's, you know, we are not fussy about censorship. We are about true artistic freedom and, you know, just the imagination and excitement and vibrancy. So, yes, it absolutely fits in.
All right, rochesterfringe.com again if you want to see more information. We are talking about the First Niagara Rochester Fringe Festival, which is coming up on September 15th through the 24th. And let me turn now to BJ Scanlon, Canary in a Coal Mine. What is Canary in a Coal Mine,
yeah,
BJ?
I'm glad you asked, Kevin. a little nervous here. We're just a small group, and it's our first time on Connectors, so. am I saying that wrong, Kevin?
For a second, I said, oh, no, because you would be the second person who's actually called me Kevin earnestly, but I realize now this
is
not.
Oh, God. Okay. No, it's true. Everybody here seems to know so much about what's going on, and we're not even done with our show yet, you know. We're still writing it, trying to make it to make it work. There's a lot of good comedy. You might not even want to see us. I mean, that's the reality. There's so much good stuff that's happening. There's just, it's a hard sell. We're not the best. There's really great performers like Thank You Kiss. There's great people like Unleashed, Left 4 Dead, all the comedy. Look at them. They're great. I'm messing all of this up. I know it. We're going to be performing, you know, we started with the first Fringe Festival, and we're here at the fifth Fringe Festival.
It's just the fifth, I think.
Fifth first Niagara.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You got to get the sponsor first. We get paid by them to do that. Okay. I don't know if I can say that. Do I? Oh, I'm so nervous. Okay. I got the cut. So we are going to be at the Multi-Use Community Cultural Center. Do you know where that is?
Yes, I do. That is on Atlantic Avenue.
142. I remember it because I go 142 Atlantic Avenue. That's how I would remember it when I was trying to remember how to get there.
Okay. Which is near Starry Nights, near the corner of University and Atlantic.
Yeah.
There.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool space. It's former church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not currently a church.
Yeah. I don't think so.
No.
That would be awkward.
Yeah.
Okay. Doing a comedy show and it's something you did not know as a church would be strange. Yeah.
Okay. I'm nodding. I'm too visual in my cues for the radio, maybe.
Canary in a Coal Mine has been together for how long, BJ Scanlon?
We have been together, I got this one, this is 6 years. But we evolve because people quit or get kicked out or leave the group or move, right? So now there's only two original members and we have a rotating guest list of the best comedians in Rochester. It's great.
Are you one of the original members?
Yeah.
How have you not been...
Great. It's because I'm one of the original members. I would have been ousted long ago. Yeah.
Okay. Are your co-performers always as sharp and focused as you are?
Yeah. I'd say that they're about as... What was the question?
Canary in a Coal Mine is performing at the Muck. Let's see here. When are you performing, BJ?
I have it written on a post-it note because I forgot it when I left here, and then your producer wrote it for me. It is September 16th and 17th at 10 o'clock p.m. That's the late, late show. And we recommend that folks come if they want to have a good time. It's at the Muck. And then that's the first Friday and Saturday. But then also I want to say that our friends Thank You Kiss, who have all been our guest stars in other shows because they're so super talented, are performing on September. Am I allowed to tell when they're performing?
Yeah.
September 17th and September 23rd. On the 17th, it's at 3, and on the 23rd, it's at 9. And I got it all in.
You did. And there's a number, you are correct that there's a number of comedy groups performing.
So many good ones.
Yeah. So why did we choose you to come on the show today?
Great. I'm glad you asked. I think it's because I was free to come. I don't have a lot going on.
Okay. I
ran into your producer. I was just hanging out in the park thinking, just without even headphones in.
Okay.
And she said, we want to do this show. And I said, sure.
Are you at some point going to focus on, you know, memorizing the lines and whatnot?
I'm glad you asked that. Yes. Should I expand? I don't know if you know how shows work, Kevin, but the way it works is that in order to have it work so that everyone knows what to say next,
yeah,
you have to memorize. So that is a goal of our show.
Okay, that's good. Is there any improv?
If we forget the lines.
Okay, there's only improv if you forget the lines.
Correct.
There's not any planned improv.
Well, I don't want to give away the show, but there might be.
Okay.
There's a sketch currently. I guess I'm giving it away. There's a sketch currently that could call for improv, but we haven't put together the final set list, so we don't know yet.
Okay. This is BJ.
Should I come back on when we have
no,
the
you've
set
done
list?
Enough. No, you've done enough.
Is my time over then?
Yeah, just about. BJ Scanlon's from Canary in a Coal Mine, and they do recommend 18 and over for the show, right?
Yeah, or 17 if they're mature, I'd say. I'd have to meet them.
You're not screening all your audience members, are you?
If they'd like to in advance, if you want to find us, you can go to facebook.com and then in the search bar type in Canary in a Coal Mine, and then we're the one that has the black logo with the yellow upside down bird, not the band from Texas.
Okay, because that was Canary in a Coal Mine. B.J. Scanlon. So comedy groups have been a routine part of Fringe, haven't they, since the beginning, Eric Fee?
Yes, absolutely. And other Fringe festivals as well often highlight comedy. You know, it's what's fantastic, I think, about comedy in terms of Fringe festivals and in terms of a lot of our venues is that they really draw in different and new audience members who may come back the rest of the year to experience dance, theater, music. But I think comedy really lends an air of excitement to the whole festival.
And one of our listeners is asking, will we ever see a show on the Genesee River?
Maybe. It's been talked about. We'll see.
Is that one of those things where you can't tell me more?
Or no, just, I don't.
There's nothing really going on right now?
No, not right now. I mean, the Genesee River is a very fast-flowing river, as you know. So it has some major drawbacks.
All right. Well, yeah.
For a show.
Yeah, but the whole thing of Fringe, but, I mean, you guys do wild stuff.
Yeah, right? We have talked about it quite a bit. So we'll see.
All right. Let's go ahead and turn to Missy Full Smith from Anomaly. What is Anomaly?
Anomaly is things that don't quite go together. So Anomaly is a piece that we put together in the 2013 Fringe Festival with the dance company Biodance that I direct, and Sound Exchange, a group that grew out of Eastman, and media artist W. Michelle Harris. And so we decided we would use the planetarium, which is a really challenging space for not only sound, but certainly movement and dance, not so much for image, but to put those together in a way that, you know, that works for an audience that's facing the ceiling, mm-hmm. has its challenges. But I think that's what made it such a special show, actually.
Well, this one's going to be September 15th, 7 p.m., yes. 17th, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m., about 45-minute performances.
Yes.
At the Museum and Science Center Strassenburg Planetarium. Tickets are $15. And your promoter, who loves everything, but she's stressed. She said she loves all the Fringe shows, but this one is particularly magical. That's a nice thing to
say. That's a very nice thing.
You know what? This show, if you don't mind my butting in here, but this show totally sold out last time. It was highly successful. And what I found personally remarkable about it was that not only were the dancers dancing within the planetarium, but for the first time ever, they were dancing on the outside of the planetarium. So they were backlighting the dancers. You were looking at the dome, and they were on the other side of the dome. And that, in combination with the music from Sound Exchange and the projection, was absolutely phenomenal.
City newspaper says, so lovely to behold, we found ourselves dreading its inevitable conclusion. So there's a lot of good reviews here. That's really cool stuff. And if you call it a multi-sensory arts collaboration, you know, how do you just define that phrase?
That's a good question. Well, as soon as you walk into the lobby of the planetarium, the show begins. You're surrounded by, I don't want to tell you exactly what, but immediately the show begins. And when you go in, you're immersed. You're immersed in image. You may be right next to a performer, and you might not know that until a little bit later on. You're listening, you're feeling, I think that it's really hard to describe. It's something you have to experience.
B.J. Scanlon is looking almost amazed and horrified at the idea of...
They have planned out their show way more than we have. I was also told your name is Evan. I am so sorry.
Well, you wouldn't be the first. You wouldn't be the first. So Anomaly has got several performances, and it is an all-ages performance, yes?
It is.
Okay, but are you... If I bring a four-year-old, what's he going to think?
I think there's enough in it for a four-year-old. Yeah. There's so much stimulation. There's visual, there's sound. It's all live. I mean, I think that it's we had babies in the audience. I mean, we did. Yeah.
Well, it's just another one of the many shows at Rochester Fringe, rochesterfringe.com. And you've heard all the great reviews. Now you know when you can see it. Tickets, again, $15 if you want to see Anomaly. So we're ripping through the performances. Thank you for being here. Have fun with the show.
Thank you. Let's get
our only short break, and we're going to try to hustle in the next crew because there's so many more shows and performances to tell you about at the 2016 First Niagara Rochester Fringe Festival. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, there are questions about Donald Trump and his relationship with Vladimir Putin. We'll sit down with Randy Stone, professor from the University of Rochester who has studied and taught on Russia for years. What are his questions about Trump and Putin? Then second hour, our monthly science roundtable focuses on carbon and climate change. Talk with you on Monday. Welcome back to Connections. We've switched out, with the exception of Erica Fee, we've switched it all out. And we've got a whole new crew of people who are performing at the First Niagara Rochester Fringe Festival, which is September 15th through the 24th. The 10 days this year marked their fifth year of Rochester Fringe. More at rochesterfringe.com. And Erica Fee is the producer. We kept her in studio because she's going to help guide us through the many cast of characters. But it's important to point out here, as many people as we're talking to this hour, they are just part of more than how many performances this year?
We have over 500 performances and events.
More than five. And the smallest performance is what?
The smallest performance is Bushwhacked in Bed, which is a four-person show in a pup tent. It's next to the Spiegel tent, and it's in a bed.
It's in a bed.
Yeah, it's selling out. But, you know, it's a sellout hit.
Okay, so.
But it really is.
And you mentioned the Spiegel tent again. The Spiegel tent's back?
Yeah, the Spiegel tent's back.
For people who haven't been to the Spiegel tent, what is it?
Oh, it's just the most glamorous tent in the world. It's an imported Belgian music hall it's an antique imported Belgian music hall at that. It's this absolutely spectacular venue with velvet and antique bar and stained glass windows and mirrors, because Spiegel means mirror. So Spiegel tents became popular around the year 1900, and what people in Europe found them fantastic for was actually for flirting, because women could make eye contact with men across the room, but by looking in a mirror.
Oh. Yeah.
So we have a lot of flirting that goes on in the Spiegel tent still.
So if you want to hang out in the Spiegel tent, how do you do? I mean, do you have to get a ticket?
Yeah, you have to get a ticket. Yep. We have a lot of really fantastic shows. This year we have a new circus-type show called Cirque du Fringe Miracle Cure, and that is starring Mark Gindick and Matt Morgan, who are comedians, clowns, vagabonds, really. And that's going to be a variety circus show. And even this year includes a high wire act in the tent. So that's going to be absolutely fantastic. We also have Silent Disco, which is on the Fridays and Saturdays of Fringe. This year we have a kids disco called Disco Kids. And we have Pandora Box, who many may know, Rochester's most famous drag queen, the star of RuPaul's Drag Race. And Pandora will be doing, as she says, her one-woman show, two nights, the final two nights of Fringe, and that's actually called The Worst Show Ever. I did not name that. And then
it's terrible for marketing.
It is terrible for marketing, but also fantastic. And then Jamie Lisso is returning to do a stand-up set in the Spiegel tent.
All right, so that we're just trying to give you as much of a flavor of what's coming up at the 2016 Fringe. And let's go around the room now. I'm going to start with Rebecca Foose from Rochester's Public Library. They've got the spooky stories in the stacks. And get right on that mic. Yes. I know there's a lot of you here. Hi, how are you,
by the way?
Hello,
thank you.
Nice to see you here.
Thank you.
What's the spooky stories in the stacks plan?
Yeah, Friends and Foundation of the Rochester Public Library and Central Library are very excited to be a location for Fringe this year. And on September 24th, which is the last Saturday, we're going to have a couple of activities at Central. We'll have the Central Library Sideshow, which is all kinds of sideshow acts going on, very family friendly, just drop in anytime between noon and 4. And then the Spooky Stories in the Stacks will be in the Rundle Memorial Building, which is the older building that makes up Central Library. And it does have a little bit of an association with the paranormal. For several reasons, but one of the three stories that people attending Stories in the Stacks will hear is about the body that was found in the Johnson Seymour race in 1902, before the library was built. And they're not sure if it was a murder or if it was a suicide, but there's a very interesting cast of characters, a night of drinking, accusations of infidelity, and two sets of footprints on the towpath.
And true story?
These are all historically researched and documented through our local history division.
Are you going to make the case, though, that there's haunting going on at the library?
Well, ghost hunters came to the library in about 2012 and had some mixed conclusions on that, but we do have some staff people who are reporting paranormal activity from time to time. I'll let you make your own conclusion.
I'm like the biggest skeptic you know, but you know what? Maybe you can try to convince me. We'll come out. And these are roughly 45 minutes, is that right?
Yes, there'll be three stories, and we'll take people down to the backstage parts of Central Library, down to the stacks, where some of the paranormal has been reported, and they'll get to hear the three stories. It'll be about 45 minutes.
It is a 13 and over performance, right?
There's some blood and guts and so on, so yes, you might want to bring teenagers.
Okay, teenagers and up. Above. September 24th, noon, 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And tickets are $8.
Yes.
Have fun with that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I know it's fun for them to be part of Fringe here. Let's keep moving around the table. I'm going to turn now to 24-hour plays. And when we talk 24-hour plays, I actually know some people who have tried to write 24-hour plays. It is amazing what they can do. I want to bring in Alexis Scott Flaherty from Writers and Books. 24-hour plays are, well, it's just what it sounds, right? You got 24 hours to create something from scratch. Is that right?
Exactly. You have six writers, six directors, and you have about 18 actors. And beginning at 8 p.m. on the Sunday the 18th, everyone gathers. The actors bring a prop and a costume, and they present themselves to the collection of writers and directors. That inspires them. They then choose. They sort of battle it out to get their actors. And then they have from about 10 o'clock until about 5 o'clock in the morning to write a unique, original 10-minute play specifically for those actors. Then the directors arrive. They battle it out to get their play. And then the actors arrive, and they rehearse. They fully memorize it. They fully produce it. And it's performed for a live audience at 7 p.m., which brings you to the conclusion of the 24 hours at 8 p.m.
Okay. And so it's 1 hour. It's 10 minutes apiece. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah.
10 minutes apiece. And if you haven't seen something like this before, you may think it's just sort of goofy or non-serious, but I know people who have done this, and they are very serious about this craft, aren't they? I mean, really working hard to create something remarkable in 24
hours.
Yeah,
and I have to tell you, it really ranges from, like you said, some of them are comic, but they're fully formed. They really have these really interesting stories and characters. They're not just sort of little spoofs. And we also have had very serious shows, very moving shows. Yeah, people really create amazing things in this period of time.
Character development in 10 minutes. I mean, how many times have you seen a movie or like a whole season of a television show and when there's zero character development?
Yeah, right.
The whole
exactly.
time. And they're in 10 minutes. They're...
Well, it's running on adrenaline, you know, that gives you a lot of energy. Everyone's terrified, which is fabulous.
All right,
no safety net.
If you want to see it 7 p.m. what night?
It's the 19th.
That is Monday.
Yes, Monday the 19th.
So they will be on the tail end, and if you get to see any of the writers, they're on sort of supersonic amounts of coffee and things like that.
They get to sleep during the day, so they come back at night.
If they can.
Right, right.
So that's, and where's the performance, by the way?
It's at Writers and Books, and we also have a 9 o'clock performance that night, which is sort of a reprise because it always sells out, so people can see it.
All right, so two performances, 7 p.m., 9 p.m.
Yep.
And the neat thing is, I suspect, again, some people may go, that may be your first time seeing Writers and Books, which is a community treasure. So
thank you.
Very cool stuff there. Have a lot of fun with that. I want to kick back to Eric Fee real quick just to ask, Fringe has so many different performances. I don't know what's sort of normal or common. This kind of performance, have you seen this before? Does this happen in other cities?
Have I seen 24-hour plays? Yes, I have attended 24-hour plays. Of course, I've had to attend the second one. No, I haven't been in, but I am basically a 24-hour play myself at that point. I'm a 10-day show. It is done in other cities. 24-hour plays is a movement that came out of, I believe, the Old Vic in London, and it's fantastic that we have it as part of Fringe. It's hugely exciting, and as Alexa was saying, really well done. You know,
right.
24 hours, it just shows you how much you can get done.
I have seen it, and I couldn't agree more. All right, Thomas Warfield is here, the man in the purple. We're wearing a radio, so people can't see, but you not only are wearing purple, you're dyed purple.
I'm dyed purple.
How are you?
I'm just great.
All right, so what are you doing for Fringe this year?
I'm doing a show on Sunday the 18th at 3 o'clock that is going to involve ways that we use dance to relieve conflict. So, we're in a time right now where people's frustrations are really high and conflict seems to be imminent, and we need ways to diffuse it. And movement is sort of a language of its own, a tool, really, to help us to kind of get out some of this emotion. And so we're going to use this venue to do that. But it's also going to be fun, interactive, and it's also presentational. It's both real live dance as well as virtual dance. So it should be a lot of fun. It's going to be at the Little Theater. And that's the RIT sort of umbrella place. And, you know, I got to say, for RIT, this is a really wonderful thing. It not only affords me opportunity to perform, but the students, really, all the student groups that get to perform there, and who wouldn't ordinarily maybe be involved with Fringe or even come to Fringe. They're way out in the RIT campus. But it really brings them into the city. It gives them something to look forward to work towards at the beginning of the school year. So I think, bravo, RIT.
And that is one performance, is that right?
That's one performance.
That's September 18th, 3 p.m. at the Little Theater. Free event.
Free event.
And good for all ages.
Good for all ages.
Of all the people I've met in the art community who believe in the power of art to create some kind of a social good, there are very few that I've met who have your passion for that. Mm-hmm. But I know that you understand there are some people who are skeptical about that. That, you know, can dance really do this, or can art really do this? What's the message for skeptics?
Well, no, we're not going to bring utopia to the world tomorrow or on September 18th. But we are going to get people to have an opportunity to have a breather from that frustration and conflict. You know, when you listen to music, when you go see a performance, a concert, you have a sort of... you're kind of lost your reality for a moment. And you're in a suspended place of imagination. And in that suspended place, you can really experience something that helps you to get rid of that frustration. So, yeah, no, we're not going to, you know, bring utopia to the world. But we are going to bring it to you in those few minutes on September 18th.
And how long is the performance?
It's 70 minutes, I believe.
Okay, just over an hour.
Yeah.
3 p.m. And one of the reasons we're even telling you this performance is 45 minutes, this performance is 60 minutes, this performance is 70 minutes is, Erica Fee, part of the fun of Fringe is the idea of people tend to plan out a day. You may hit a couple of performances. You may hit four or five in a day, right?
That's right. So one of the hallmarks of all Fringe festivals is that performances tend to last about an hour in length.
Yep.
So that you can experience various performances and events on the same day. So we, you know, while a production, as we always say, of Nicholas Nickleby may be a great idea, it's not really a Fringe type show. So yeah, we keep about an hour in length and keep it quick.
Let me turn to Phil Campbell from the Campbell Brothers. And that is a performance on the Gibb Street main stage on September 23rd. Campbell Brothers is what?
The Campbell Brothers is a gospel group that has performed both internationally as well as nationally. And our style of music is comes out of a genre that's been dubbed sacred steel, in that we have a pedal steel and a lap steel guitar. We are black guys that are playing pedal steel and lap steel, which is unusual as well. But the gospel tradition that we come from is very familiar, and but it still has a bluesy tint to it. So as a result, we have fans that reach across the spectrum, not only from gospel, but also in the blues and roots and jazz community.
When did you learn to play?
I started learning to play in church at the age of 12. I play guitar. My two brothers play the lap and pedal steel. And we grew up playing in church, and really we were discovered, so to speak, by our Hooli Records that wanted to bring this music out to the world. They are a roots label known for discovering Cajun music and the like. And they distributed our initial record overseas, and that's when we first started getting invitations to Switzerland and the Berlin Jazz Festival.
Wow.
And many events like that. Europe has a great appreciation for African-American art forms of jazz, blues, and gospel, and so it was a natural connection there. But again, stateside, we've had quite a reception as well.
Well, does Europe have more of an appreciation, you think, than we do?
For the traditional,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. And some of that is a function of, you know, again, the American audience has seen this. They've grown grown up with it, so it's kind of, I don't want to say old hat, but it's something that's very familiar. So in the quest for the new, it might not be as appreciated as much as, but in Europe, it is absolutely treasured because they don't get to see it as often.
I don't think it's old. I mean, honestly, I don't think it's old hat for most people that are probably listening right now. So give us a sense of what the show would be like.
Well, when you come to a Campbell Brothers show, you can expect to be a lively event. Mm-hmm. It is not something that you sit quietly by and enjoy. We expect you to participate. One of the most complimentary terms or expressions you can give to us, we have audience members that tell us, "I feel better that I when I came to this show as before when I came before I came, my spirit was uplifted." That is means the world to us because that's what the music is about. It is about bringing us together, what we call one accord, and allowing us to connect on high to our spiritual, find our spiritual place, which helps us back to Thomas's point to connect and think in terms beyond ourselves and actually to talk about how do we hear each other, how do we understand each other, and it's in that place that we can resolve many of the conflicts that we're seeing right now.
Appreciate seeing that joy, huh? That uplift.
Absolutely, and you know, we were fortunate enough to be at Party in the Park with Robert Randolph last night. We sat in with him. Same kind of experience. We were at Grassroots Festival in Ithaca. Same kind of thing, and we expect to bring that kind of passion, energy, and spirit to the Fringe Festival. We're absolutely very appreciative that we were invited.
The Gibbs Street Main Stage. It's a free, non-ticketed event, all ages welcome. That's September 23rd, starts at about 9:40, and they'll go to about 11 is the plan.
That's the plan.
Thanks for being here. Have fun with that, and I hope a lot of people who haven't seen you get a chance.
Absolutely. Again, Rochester, we whenever we get a chance to play here, we don't play all that often, but whenever we do get a chance to play here, it's an absolute blast that we can share our music with the home folks as well.
Well, let me turn to Bob Holdsworth. Stand Up Through the Ages, last show we can talk about. Again, we're hitting as many as we can this hour, but rochesterfringe.com if you want to hear more. And Bob Holdsworth, we've talked a little comedy on this program before. What is Stand Up Through the Ages?
Hi, Evan. How you doing? Stand Up Through the Ages is kind of a different stand-up comedy showcase. I was contacted by a friend of mine at School of the Arts who told me that they were teaming up with RAPA to create a comedy room this year, and she wanted to know if I wanted to come up with a stand-up concept. And so Stand Up Through the Ages, it sounds like it's going to be a historical retrospective going back to the medieval times. But what it is the gimmick is that it's actually a showcase of comics, and each comic is at a different age of their life. So I've got a comic in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s. And since stand-up comes kind of from your personal experience, we've all got different perspectives and experiences. And I think by the time you put us all together in a one-hour show, you're gonna get a taste of all different stages of life.
Wait, and did I catch? Are you one of the comics there?
I will be hosting and doing time and representing the 50-year-olds.
I didn't want to age you. I didn't ask. You volunteered
man.
All right. So, are you saying that comedy in your 20s isn't the same as comedy in your 70s?
There's a lot of universal stuff, but I think that's one of the interesting things about it is you get these perspectives and you find out what is universal and what is a very different perspective at 20 than you have at 60 or 70.
All right, 60-minute show. How long are the sets then? It's 5 to 7 minutes each?
Seven to ten minutes each. We'll get it done in an hour.
Okay. And by the way, I read somebody say the other day, I can't remember who said it, that if you want to get 10 minutes of good stand-up, you've got to write about 5 or 6 hours. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think I don't think of it in terms of how much time you wrote, but how much time it took to write it and repeat it and refine it. Sometimes I think of it about like, you know, you put chili in a pot and you add all these ingredients and then you keep working at it until it simmers down to the good stuff. And that's kind of what doing stand-up is. You try it out at an open mic or in front of an audience and you see where people laugh and certain things bug you. Sometimes I'll have something kicking around in my head for a year before I figure it out, and then finally I'll get excited and I can't wait to get on stage and try it out.
Do you ever get on stage and a joke just totally doesn't work and you think, listen, this is funny. I really believe in this joke. I cannot believe this isn't working.
It happens more often than not. Usually, though, I'll go back and I'll listen to a tape, or I'll try to figure out, you know, did I screw up the delivery? Did I you know, turn my head away from the mic? Is there some way that they didn't hear it? Because clearly, this joke is great.
This joke is really good. Well, Bob Holdsworth has taught stand-up. He's with Stand Up Through the Ages, and you can check that out. Where is it? The Rappa School of the Arts? Is that right?
It is, yeah, the Rappa Stage of School of the Arts. They've created a new venue this year called the DS Comedy Club. And so we'll be doing four performances there on the 22nd, the 23rd, and then two shows on the 24th.
Okay. 1 hour shows, Comedy Through the Ages. They recommend ages 18 and over, and tickets are $12 a piece if you want to check it out. Well, have fun with that.
Well, thanks a lot, Adam.
I have no doubt that your audience is going to have fun with that. We've talked to Bob before on comedy, down to about our last 80 seconds or so. And Erica Fee, we couldn't get to everything. We talked to a lot of people, a lot of talented people this hour who are going to be performing at Fringe. What else didn't we get to that you want to make sure the audience hears about?
We didn't get to all of our activities on Saturday, September 17th at Parcel 5. Not only will Streb be performing this year, we're also doing a hip-hop dance and breakdancing competition called Fringe Street Beat. So get your teams together. Teams of three. So that's going to be a really exciting event. But, you know, basically the guide comes out on August 10th. So that will hit the streets then. People can wait for their paper guides or they can go online right now and browse the shows.
Okay. And no performers are going to be upset with you for not mentioning, right? There's too many.
That's absolutely impossible.
There's 500 yeah. plus performances.
I'm sure that I should go out the... Do you have a secret exit?
No. No. Honestly, listen, I mean, every year when Erica comes on, we talk Fringe here as it's grown. We try to bring in a wide range of performers represented. We know we can't get it all, but that's why RochesterFringe.com is there. It really has grown. It's been fascinating to see it. Good luck. Thank you. I hope no drama between now and then, which is sort of a silly thing, though, because there's always drama. But
that's right.
But I know there won't be. And go ahead, Bill. I know you want to jump in
and,
before we go.
Again, here. We just like to, all of us as artists, we just like to express our thanks to Erica and the Fringe organization for the work that they do to put these up. This is not easy. And dealing with artists is not easy. And so, again, we just really thank them for all the work and effort and publicity and promotion and everything that they're doing to put arts out in the forefront in our community. Thank you.
Well said, Phil. Thank you. I think that's well said. A lot of hear-hears from the artists here and probably listening to this program. Thank you, Erica Fee. See you at the Fringe.
Yeah, see you then.
And thanks to all the artists and performers who are here. Have fun, everybody. Thanks to John Andrus, our engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. Deprina Godboldos, our intern. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you've had a great week and hope you have a lovely weekend, and we'll talk with you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.